Hello, welcome to the Back of My Play podcast. This is episode number 8. This week we're going to be talking about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Turtles in Time for the arcade and Super Nintendo, and also its companion, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the Hyperstone Heist. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and along with me, as always, is Trey Gibson. Trey, how you doing?
Cowabunga.
Great. And then we also have Josh Hillier.
Hey, everybody. I just want to let you guys know that every time I see a pizza in the street, I'm inclined to pick it up and eat it, and I start spinning around in circles, and I can't be held accountable for anything that I do.
Just like the first time we did it. Great job, Josh. So we have a great show lined up for you. Obviously, two really, really cool games that we're going to be talking about that have a really interesting history that not only stem back from, you know, just Super Nintendo versus Genesis, but also in the arcades. And one thing that we have to reference, because we are really talking about an arcade game, is its young, or I should say older brother, or its predecessor, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles arcade game that came out in 1991. And it was, you know, a groundbreaking game for a lot of people. It's one of those first four-player multiplayer games that stemmed other games that would be conversions for those cabinets, like Sunset Riders, X-Men, which was also in a six-player cabinet. But Konami just really nailed it when it came to that four-player beat-em-up. And we just have to make a mention of that game before we go any further. There was obviously ports of the original arcade game that went to the Nintendo Entertainment System, and it was a relatively good port done from our good friends at Konami. And again, something that we have to mention. And let's be real, like the coolest thing, I still remember Salem Willows was the local amusement, like arcade that I went to as a kid. My dad would take us there for story time real quick. And like that was the game that always drew my attention, because if you were, and it's still there. Like, that cabinet is still there. Like, you can go to Salem Willows and they have the original cabinet. It's beat to shit, but they still have it. And seeing, like, that April O'Neil actress on the side with her big-ass camcorder, and it was just an iconic-looking cabinet that it really just was great, because that was, like, the huge thing at the time. You talk about Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and it was arguably the biggest franchise for kids out there outside of Mario, outside of, you know, the X-Men series. So, again, it's something that we have to just preface before we get into these two fantastic games. But let's talk about them. So, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Turtles in Time, came out in the arcades first and foremost, but it was then ported to what many of us played, which was the Super Nintendo version, in July 24th, 1992 in Japan, and then not too far later in August 1992 in North America. And the great thing about this was that it was so close to arcade perfect that you could almost just look at both of them side by side and really know which one is which, until you start seeing things like the crazy Mode 7 graphics that they implemented into the Super Nintendo version. Some other things that I want to quickly reference as well is that Turtles in Time was not like a super, after the first game, a lot of operators, arcade operators, just kept Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles because it was still bringing in money. Not a lot of people did the conversion to Turtles in Time. And you can tell, like, even today, because now that I am an arcade machine owner again, if you start looking around for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Turtles in Time arcade boards, they're like $400 or $500 just for the board. That's not even to, like, say, find a Turtles in Time machine, because a lot of those machines, again, were conversion kits, which, to reference real quick, a conversion kit, you can basically just grab a machine, say it's already a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, you can get a conversion kit that would, say, be for Sunset Riders, which is a board, a new marquee, a new control panel overlay, and maybe a new side art, and you get a brand new game without having to swap out the actual machine itself. So that's really cool stuff. And the other game that we're going to be talking about is Hyperstone Heist, but we're going to get to that in a minute. So just, again, some quick history about the Super Nintendo port is that, for the plot, the Turtles are starting in downtown New York, and they're just really trying to figure out what Shredder is up to, because, of course, if you're going to do anything and do it crazy, you're going to steal the Statue of Liberty. And that's exactly what he does. He, John, what's his name? Copperfield? Whatever's the magician that used to hide everything.
Yeah.
David Copperfield.
David Copperfield. Thank you. Just like the book. And anyways, he would... He basically stole the Statue of Liberty, and that gets the ball rolling. And then when you get to Shredder the first time, he's like, actually, this is the best way to get rid of the Turtles. I'm just going to send them back to 25 million BC, and they can deal with the dinosaurs and things like that. So that's how we kind of get started with Turtles in Time. And it's really weird because at the time of the release was right near the Secret of the Ooze movie. So if you look at like the continue screen for Turtles in Time, you'll actually see like that logo of the turtles sneaking their heads out from under the sewer. So that's an interesting touch. And I didn't really even realize it until I was replaying it now. But anyways, that's just some of the history stuff. Other quick things is that, you know, because of the movie The Secret of the Ooze, they included things like Tokar and Razor as end-level bosses in Turtles in Time, just to, again, kind of connect it with the movie, because that movie was huge when it came out. It was gigantic. The original music of the game soundtrack was composed by Izumi, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles veteran, and also composed the music for the previous arcade game in the series. It was also arranged for the Super Nintendo version by Uehara and Uiko, both who went on to produce several Konami games, including another Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle game, Tournament Fighters, which also is actually, I think, kind of underrated. In addition, the soundtrack also came as part of a really cool Konami All-Stars collection that they put out in 1993, which is, if you can find those recordings, are really cool. And they also included a version at the end of the game of Coming Out of Their the Pizza Power song that was in the live Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles concert, which thank God I never went to, called Coming Out of Their Shells. So
hey, why are you so happy you never went to the concert? Sorry to interrupt the flow.
I still have the VHS.
Yeah, I think the angry video game nerd like did a video on the concert and the music video that they did for it, and it was pretty terrible, like Chuck E. Cheese terrible.
Yeah, I had the VHS. I liked it as a kid. I watched it like
of the concert.
Like they put out a video like of the whole like concert that you could buy. It was like the whole thing. And I remember, like, I left it in my grandparents. I found it down there, watched it, and I was so embarrassed. Like, I like this as a kid. It's so bad.
Well, they were so ashamed of you, I'm sure.
That's the crazy thing about this topic, is that it is a franchise that is obviously outside of video games. It's also incredibly popular, from the cartoon to the action figures and all that stuff. So I'm sure we're going to have plenty of cool stuff to talk about that. But as I was alluding to before, for the Super Nintendo version, they're actually missing some animations from the arcade version to save on processing power and some of the graphic effects. But they made use of the Mode 7 graphics for forward scrolling, and also, you know, the ability to like grab dudes and throw them at the screen, which is really, really cool. And it's unfortunately one of the differences between that and Hyperstone Heist. Also, the first fight with Shredder in the Technodrome was altered to, again, show off the Mode 7 graphics. And it's basically like, I did a live stream of this, and it's more or less kind of like a ripoff of the Battletoads boss battle from the first level, where you're grabbing the balls and throwing them back at the guy shooting at you. It's literally the same exact boss battle. The NES Super Nintendo version is also missing certain voice samples for both Turtles and boss characters. But to be honest, like I said, you're not going to really notice that. Okay, so let's talk about Hyperstone Heist real quick, and we'll get into the differences too in a second. So Hyperstone Heist really was on the heels of Turtles in Time. It came out in December 22nd, 92 in Japan, and it got an earlier release in August 11th, 1992 in North America. So this was one of those games where you had that direct head-to-head comparison, Super Nintendo version versus the Genesis version. And both games share nearly the same soundtrack and sound effects. Like, I literally played through both of these games within an hour of each other today, and they're pretty much spot on. But one thing I did enjoy is that the sounds and the songs, they're actually it's a faster tempo in the Genesis version. I don't know why, but it is, and it makes the songs a little bit more enjoyable for me, a little bit more upbeat. And also, the major difference is that Hyperstone Heist is missing a bunch of content from Turtles in Time. They tried to elongate the levels by adding in some special sections like a sewer section in stage one. But in the end, like, for example, it took me about 30 minutes to beat Hyperstone Heist and then about 45 to beat Turtles in Time. So it's a decent sized gap. The other main difference is that in Hyperstone Heist, you have fewer enemies on the screen. Again, this is going back to like the same thing we talked about with Final Fight and Streets of Rage 2, where there's fewer enemies on the screen. And to make up for that, the AI was actually harder in Hyperstone Heist compared to Turtles in Time to make up for that. So that is a brief history. We're going to be talking about more of the differences between the two games as we go back to 1992 and just drop the gloves, Super Nintendo versus Genesis, all over again. So stick around, we're going to duke it out. Traveled like Turtles in Time, I guess, by beaming, because that's kind of how they do it in the game. And we're back in 1992, where the Super Nintendo was just launched. The Genesis is knocking out some classics. And Turtles are huge. They got a movie out, their second movie out. The television show is still doing great. If you don't have a Raphael action figure, you're a loser. And we're playing Turtles games at home. So I want to start off with Trey. Trey, what was your first experience with the 16-bit Turtle games?
Before I go into that, I would like to make a comment about something you just said. You said if you did not have a Raphael action figure, you're a loser. So I'm assuming you think Raphael is the best Turtle.
Just at the time, gelled with me the best, and I liked the color red. And for some reason, I'm not joking, I got two Turtles ever for like as action figures, and those were the only ones I ever got. So I just figured my parents thought I was, how would you describe him? More of a loner? No. No, actually, yeah, a little bit of an asshole. And I've always been a loner. So even though I have a brother and a sister, I've always had no problems doing, you know, going off and doing stuff by myself, but maybe that's why. Yeah, I'm an asshole.
I feel the same way, so I'm giving you a high five to the air, because Raphael is my favorite turtle. Cool. Still is. But yeah, he got portrayed differently in the show. He was kind of a smart ass in the show, but in the movies, he was kind of like a loner asshole type. But yeah, Turtles in Time. I had the arcade game on NES, and when I saw that there was this new Ninja Turtles game that I could get on my Super Nintendo, I had to have it immediately, pretty much like every action figure. I had so many Ninja Turtle action figures, and it's a crying shame that I don't know what happened to them. I think my parents sold them, and yeah, bad. Very bad. But Turtles in Time was fantastic. Oh, I would play it by myself. I'd have my dad come and play the game with me. As long as I could be Raphael, I would greatly enjoy it. But yeah, I mean, it was a you know, it's kind of short, but at the same time, it's a lot of fun. It's just a good beat 'em up style action game. So one thing I always wondered, even as a kid, when Shredder sends you back in time, were the foot soldiers already there waiting on you?
Like, so does some that mean that they were, yeah, so like the foot soldiers were around for like major events like the fall of Rome?
Yeah,
and,
so like, no, yeah, no, like, no, 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 no. Okay, in preparation for the show, I also watched Time Cop last night. No joke, dead serious, I watched Time Cop last night.
I saw that on Twitter.
Okay, so, and you got to keep in mind that when evil Ron Silver is sending dudes back in time, like, you can send guys back there in preparation for what you're going to do. And the way of the Time Cop universe is that you don't really have large ripples until there's a death or a major change of events. So you can get guys sent back to just kind of hang out and not really cause much trouble until you really, like, activate them. You know what I'm saying? Like a sleeper cell. And then you get going.
Yeah, because, you know, I see some of them, like, ride in on, like, dinosaurs. So, like, did they get there beforehand and tame these dinosaurs so they could ride in all extravagantly?
He had to send them with enough time for them to get used to the dinosaurs and to learn how to ride them properly and, like, what to feed them and how not to be slain.
Yeah, he sent them on training. That was employee training. It's mandated.
He's a great manager, Shredder.
Yeah, he is. Dude runs a good business.
All right.
But, anyways, you know, I was a hardcore Ninja Turtles fan back in the day. Like, Ninja Turtles was, like, the it thing for me for the longest time. But the game, it's a classic to me, and it holds up really well. I had a blast playing. I played it probably 3 or 4 times this week, and I had a buddy come over yesterday, and we played through it, and he, you know, like, he's like, man, he's like, I didn't realize how well this holds up. It's a lot of fun. So, I mean, we enjoyed it. I mean, it holds up well. And as a kid, I thought the same thing. And, like, that was the talk of school. Go to school the next day. You guys get Turtles in Time yet? No, losers. I'm hanging out with you. I had the Raphael attitude.
Yeah, so, we're rocking it. So you said that you and your dad used to play it together. Yep. How was that? Was he pretty good at the game?
He was. And, you know, look, my dad's a big kid at heart, even still to this day. But then, you know, he actively tried to show an interest in stuff I liked. So, that's like, cool. Every Saturday morning, he would be watching Ninja Turtles with me and, you know, stuff like that. So, he was a Michelangelo fan. So
yeah, what a neat bonding experience.
Yeah, it really was. It was a good one. I mean, we still kind of talk about it every now and then. But at the same time, you know, we had that good bonding experience. But I'm wondering if he's the one that got rid of my Ninja Turtle figures. In that case, we're going to have an issue.
Yeah, he might have hoarded them or something.
Yeah.
This is a great co-op multiplayer game.
It really is.
And it most certainly is.
I played the original arcade game back in, I mean, like, this was back before Chuck E. Cheese was Chuck E. Cheese. It was Showbiz. I don't know if you guys remember that. Yeah. But that was, like, the big game to play at Showbiz. And I wasted many a quarters, but I beat that game several times. But I never did play Turtles in Time, the arcade version. So I wish there was some way I could find that and play it.
If you look on eBay right now, there's boards for $450.
Oh, I wish there was a way I could play it that I could afford.
Okay.
Dot, 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 dot.
Are you trying to say that you want us to buy it for you?
No, I'm just saying I cannot buy it.
Okay.
Too bad that, you know, it is really sad. Like, we aren't getting more arcade, straight up arcade ports on things like WiiWare and PSN and stuff like that, instead of like what they did for when they re-released Turtles in Time. I know I'm getting ahead of ourselves, but when they re-released that and tried to like update the graphics and basically Ubisoft the game, it really hurt it. And I just wish they just basically just all right, since we don't really have the license to send, like, for Xbox Live, the Super Nintendo version, we have the rights for the arcade version. Let's just, I said this on the stream too, just give us the arcade version. That's all you have to do with some options. Like, Capcom has done a great job with that one, like Metal Sword and Final Fight, that Final Fight Double Impact set. They've done a great job, and, you know, it's a great example.
Yeah, like, I mean, they, you know, well, it wasn't Ubisoft that did the original arcade on Xbox Live, was it? I think it was Konami.
No, it was Ubisoft. They had the rights for it.
Well, what in the world? Why didn't they do the same thing with that? I don't understand that.
Because it's Ubisoft. But
I mean, to kind of summarize, Turtles in Time was one of my favorite Super NES games, just because, you know, turtles were something I held and still do near and dear to my heart. So, and like you said, Josh, you know, the bonding experience I had with my dad, that made it a lot of fun between playing that and Street Fighter. I mean, my dad, like I said, is a big kid at heart, so it helped and it made the game more enjoyable, because it's always more fun to play with somebody else and not just having to go through it alone. But, you know,
that's cool. That's really cool. Yeah.
Yep. So.
So, all right. I have kind of like a different kind of opinion on this, because when I got my first experience, again, like I said in the previous segment, I played, whenever I had money, I would play the arcade game. And unfortunately, growing up at this period in my life, we were not what you would even say middle class. We were lower kind of class in terms of economic status. So we would maybe get like $1 or $2 for the whole time we would be at this place, San Molo's. So that means if you're gonna, like, you get like 4 plays of a game for $1 if you're lucky. And that means you gotta be really selective with what you want to play. And that also means you get to decide between arcade games and redemption games, which at the time, you know what? If I wanted, you know, to get some Starburst or something like that, I would go and play some of the redemption games. But the first time when I saw, like, oh my God, there is a home version of a Turtles arcade game was, again, I think I mentioned it, I don't know if it was on the air, but my buddy JJ's house, where he had the Sega Genesis and had a copy of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, The Hyperstone Heist, which for all I knew at the time, even though I had Super Nintendo, I didn't know about the Turtles game. I'd never rented it. I saw this Hyperstone Heist game and was blown away. I thought it was the best thing I've ever played in my life. And we played through that thing like 3 or 4 times in one night. We stayed up. The great thing about JJ's parents is that they did not care how late we stayed up. Like, we would just eat junk food and stay up to like midnight, which as like an 8-year-old was pretty awesome. And we just played that game forever. And there was nothing bad about the game. Everything about the game was absolutely fantastic. And you got to keep in mind, for the audience that it was coming out for at the time, it was the perfect game. Because you look at other games that were licensed properties, you look at your Back to the Future games, which, as a huge Back to the Future fan, like, it's just terrible to own that crap, except for Super Back to the Future 2 on the Super Famicom, which is not bad. And the X-Men games that came out on NES, you look at any kind of child or, you know, property that was aimed towards children. If there was a video game for it, it was probably terrible. Not the case with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Throughout the span of games that came out for it on the NES and the Super Nintendo and the Genesis, even the first Turtles game for the NES was relatively good. It had some pretty good action in it. You could play as all 4 Turtles. It was hard, and some of the mechanics were pretty rough, but it was still not a terrible game coming from Ultra. So, that, you know, that was the biggest thing that I got of playing that as a kid. It was just like, man, this is exactly what I want out of a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles game. It is literally perfect. It has the music from the show. It has the music from the movie. The only thing that just didn't have was the Vanilla Ice, Go Ninja, Go Ninja, Go. And if it had that, it would be 11 out of 10. It would be a more than perfect game. And I still think that it holds up, but I'll talk about that later.
Josh. 11 shells out of 10, huh?
Yeah, so Josh, you actually played through both of these growing up. Like, I didn't play the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles in Time till like 97 or something like that.
Right, I was a big Ninja Turtles fan. I don't know if I'd call myself a fanboy because there were certainly a lot of people who knew more about the Turtles than I did. But I had a lot of the toys. And guys, I'm going to go on and admit this, and it still was the first thing I said last week when we were closing the show. I had a big crush on April O'Neil, and perhaps that's the reason that I ended up in news as my first job out of college was this, you know, April O'Neil thing I'd held on to all these years. And so I watched the show to see appearances of her. And anyway, so of course I played both of the games between liking the Turtles' personalities. I was a Michelangelo guy, by the way, which probably isn't that surprising in terms of a psychological profile. Yeah, I played both games. I don't think I actually received both of the games. I know that I owned Hyperstone Heist, and I think I rented Turtles in Time. So that's a case of me failing in terms of which one I chose to own. But I liked Hyperstone Heist. I liked Hyperstone Heist quite a bit because it felt like I could feel the difference in speed, and it really did feel faster. And there were some conversations on the playground that had to do with blast processing and all that, and I certainly was buying in that, yeah, man, you can tell the difference in Ninja Turtles. This game is really fast compared to the SNES version. So I rented the SNES version a few times, and I was kind of confused because it felt like I was playing the same game, but it had all this extra stuff, and I wasn't really, because this was a time when I didn't really have access to detailed comparisons like what I could just quickly look up on the internet today. So I just kind of picked up on all the same backgrounds and sequences and things like that, but they were remixed in different orders. So that was a little bit baffling to me. And in retrospect, I think that they made the right decision, Konami did, in terms of naming the games different things instead of naming them the same thing, because that would have made the Genesis version look a lot worse than it did if they were both called Turtles in Time, but one of them was missing, like, you know, a third or more of the content of the other.
Well, the crazy thing that they did is, like, they didn't even... It's like some of the same levels, but the story is really unrelated. Like they basically just took out all the dates from the levels. Like at the start of the level, they just didn't throw in the date, but you're still playing on like a pirate ship. You're still spending time in the sewers and stuff like that. Like they're really just taking that part out. And then we're missing the levels that kind of require the extra juice of the Super Nintendo.
Hey, and who needs context?
No, like I said, when I was playing Hyperstone Heist, not knowing about Turtles in Time, I thought there was no way this game could be any better.
Right. Oh, what a neat thing then to, you know, and I experienced that in terms of when I read the SNES version. I was like, whoa, I would never admit this to anyone, but this is cool. This is probably a little bit better. But I had already, you know, put my stake in the ground at the playground in terms of saying that the Genesis version was pretty hot with speed and whatnot.
Well, one of the main things I will say, you know, playing Hyperstone... Actually, we'll save this for the next segment. You guys have anything else before we go back to the future?
Cowabunga.
Yeah, Pizza Power, bring it on.
All right, so we're going to take a quick break here. Some more awesome music from the folks at Konami. Thank them for delivering great tunes. Stick around. So we're back in 2013, and again, like I mentioned earlier, I streamed both of these playthroughs on twitch.tv/KevinLarrabee, and I'm going to be doing some more of that even when I'm out in Japan. But the cool thing about these two games is, and the best thing that I did is I played them in the order of Hyperstone Heist, then Turtles in Time, because if you do it in the reverse order, it can be disappointing. So it's like, I think that's the best way to play them, but... Anyways, when it came to kind of comparing the two, again, I still had a blast playing through Hyperstone Heist. So my buddy Eric came over and we played through it two player, and it was a lot of fun. It was, again, I felt like nothing was missing from the game until playing through Turtles in Time today. But one of the cool differences between the two games is that you actually have like a sprint button or a run button on the Genesis version instead of having to kind of like queue it up on the Super Nintendo version. So I found that to be a little bit more effective for combat and stuff like that. So you could,
I agree with you. Yeah, that's really helpful just for dodging enemies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yeah, absolutely. So you didn't have like that build up time, like in the Super Nintendo version. Also, to be honest, like I really think that you have to give Konami a ton of credit for the port quality because they are so close, minus the missing levels. I want you to compare it to, and people out there, if you haven't, go check this out. Look at the Super Nintendo version of Sunset Riders versus the Genesis version of Sunset Riders, and the Genesis version is absolutely terrible. It's disgusting, the difference between the two, where these you can at least compare between the two. The Genesis version of Sunset Riders is like completely different level layouts. They're missing like tons of aspects of the game. The enemies that you fight against are completely different, and they're harder to harder to aim up, line up your shots and things like that. Konami did a much better job with this game. So I want to get that part out. Also, another one of the weird differences between the two games is that the enemy colors are different between the two based on their difficulty or like the level of the enemies. Like the basic easy enemy in the Super Nintendo version is purple, and then in the Genesis version, they're like the reddish orange, which again, in the vice versa, those are the guys that throw like the ninja stars at you or whatever. So another weird difference in that. Also, the only thing that I will really give the Super Nintendo version is that it does have more levels. I think it's interesting that they have a time attack mode, although it's kind of worthless. And basically with the time attack mode, there's three stages where they break up the stages into a couple sections and you just beat them as fast as you can. And then there's like a versus mode a la Streets of Rage that we talked about. And again, pretty much throwaway. It's no Tournament Fighters. It's no Street Fighter 2.
Two games in one, Kevin. Think about it. A value proposition.
Oh, I understand. I think there's Turtles in Time is a better value, but I still think if I'm back in 1992 and I only have a Genesis, I'm not really disappointed.
Yeah, you got it. You got to play it anyway. Absolutely.
So, Trey, why don't you? What are your thoughts?
Well,
you got to keep in mind that Trey basically is like he shits Mario's mushrooms. Okay, that's basically what he craps out. Because he lives and breathes Nintendo.
That's how he got the job on the podcast, actually.
Back then I did. I'm not so much as a Nintendo fan now.
I'm just kidding.
Nostalgic-wise, yeah. No, like, okay, so I mean, I played him back-to-back, and this was the first time I'd played Hyperstone Heist. And, like, yeah, the audio tracks are the same, but, like, one, Hyperstone Heist just kind of felt like it didn't have any direction. Like, I mean, like, there, like you said earlier, there's really no clear story. Like, it even starts the same way.
Turtles in Time does not have a story.
But it's got direction. Like, you're going back and forth in time. Yeah, it's got, like, Hyperstone Heist, it begins the same way Turtles in Time does. Then it's just like, yeah, it's got the news thing with April.
Yeah, but, I mean, the level layout is different. And you got to keep in mind that I think Hyperstone Heist is just like an episode of the TV show. It's like the same thing. All he does is heist some Hyperstones that give him special powers. It allows him to turn into Super Shredder. What allows him to turn into Super Shredder in Turtles in Time, may I ask you that?
He drinks the ooze like he does in the movie.
I believe in Hyperstones more than ooze.
What?
I see this as an argument about the merits of film versus television.
No. He asked, and he drank ooze like he did in the movie. That's how he became Super Shredder.
I don't remember that at the end of Turtles in Time. He doesn't drink ooze. He just goes into his like friggin' portal. Like he is like this power plate that he steps on. He floats in the air and turns into a super shredder.
Are you sure?
I'm 100. I just played it this morning.
Okay, but it's still a better game. That's relevant.
No, but you're talking about the story. I'm just saying Hyperstone Heist makes more sense to turn him into a super shredder.
It's got okay, but still, like that doesn't make up for the rest of the game being like all over the place.
But it's a beat 'em up. They go to different areas.
I'm aware of that, but like still, like I didn't like what was going
on.
Dude,
it's just not going to be a story driven game.
Okay, so let's talk about the gameplay and how slow it is and how clunky it feels compared to the Super NES game,
I actually think it feels a lot better on the Genesis.
Bull.
I think the jump kicks are a lot better. You don't have as much, you know, like when you get that floaty jump kick, I don't think that happens as often. And again, I think having that ability to just hold down the C button to sprint and then like butt into enemies is way more effective, and it allows you for better crowd control.
I disagree. I don't mind the running start. Like, I didn't have any problems dodging anything.
See, I'm somewhere between you two right now. Like, if I were to moderate this discussion... I could be Splinter,
it
perhaps.
Felt like, okay, so one thing I would give Hyperstone Heist an advantage in is the way it looks. It looks better than Turtles in Time. It's a better looking game. Turtles in Time's got like a bright neon like feel to the whole thing.
That's interesting. Yeah, yeah.
And well, Hyperstone Heist looks more turtle-y. It looks more Ninja Turtle-y. Okay, like
this is exactly what I was going to say. Is it looks like a sequel to the arcade game,
yes.
And it looks less like, you know, just. And that's even mentioned, like, that's one of the main differences between the two is they just basically made the Super Nintendo version super bright and colorful.
It is. It is. It's got a very neon feel to it. And I like Hyperstone Heist better in that aspect.
Did you mess around with, like, in the options, you can switch between, anime and then comic
and
book?
Comic. Yeah,
yeah,
I did.
Yeah, the first couple times I played it when I revisited it, I didn't do that, and then when I was looking through the options, because I put it on hard when I played through it again, I saw that. I was like, oh, hell yeah, I forgot about that.
That's not weird.
So I turned that on. It was pretty cool. I mean, you know, is it accurate to the comics? I thought in the comics they were all like...
It's just a darker tone for the Turtles we're talking about, but I don't think it makes too much of a difference. It's just kind of interesting that it's in there.
But yeah, no, I mean, love that, like, that's included.
Just me personally, like, I did not think the gameplay was better on the Hyperstone Heist compared to the Super NES. I like the Super NES's gameplay better. It just feels faster. And then the audio in the Genesis is terrible. Those sound effects made my ears bleed.
That is true.
No, it's not. I don't know what you got. How are you playing this game?
I'm trying to think who was the Leatherhead, the alligator. He throws like the... No, it was foot soldiers. That they would jump up in the air and throw the three knives at you. Man, when that hit the ground, I was like, "What the f- is that?"
Are you
like, it's
serious?
Making my ears
this is
bleed.
Your this is the complaint that you have is the sound effects of the throwing the knives that they're throwing,
and the music didn't even sound as good. Oh,
Trade it, man. God. It's great.
All right. Pause for a second. All right, you guys. What I'm going to do right now, we're going to take a mini break mid segment, and I'm going to play you first the song from stage. I'm going to play you the same song, but between the two games, and I'm going to play the Super Nintendo version first and then the Genesis version, and I want you to compare the two. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. All right, we're back, and you guys listened to it. They compared the Super Nintendo versus the Genesis version, and let's keep this in mind, guys, that the Super Nintendo sound chip developed by the great folks at Sony was obviously superior. But I'm just saying that they are similar sounding.
So, guys, I'm just saying, basically, just the Super Nintendo sounds much better. That's that.
It doesn't sound. It sounds better.
A lot better.
But it, what do you want them to do? Like, it is a. I mean, the sound chip is like a 40-year-old chip.
I don't want them to do anything. The question was, what do I think? And that's what I think.
But you said it sounds way better. I think the soundtrack for Hyperstone Heist is perfectly good.
There's a moving scale going on here.
No, I think it's totally. I think it's. I honestly, if I was gonna like go get in a fight with someone, I would be fine listening to Hyperstone Heist and getting pumped up. If I was gonna like fight Brock Lesnar or something,
that's true.
You better bring more than that.
So wear your earbuds for the fight. That's normal.
No, he's got a stomach disease. I'll be fine. All right. Yeah, so
he can't take a hit to the chin either.
Yeah. Okay. So kind of going forward, obviously, like I said, there, you know, there's some differences, and maybe I just got some benefit because I got one of those awesome S video and audio stereo output Genesis's, and it I thought it sounded really good. And you can also watch the stream too and decide for yourself, listen to the sound of the stream.
It's kind of like watching a band play at a VFW hall. You know, they have a lot of heart.
Trey, do you have an Apple laptop?
No.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Where are you going with this?
Yeah, I want to hear.
I didn't know if you were going to be like the Mac guy. It's like the Mac's better. The Mac version's always better.
I don't like Macs.
Because I'm sure we will eventually find a Super Nintendo versus Genesis game. Actually, look at that. Final Fight CD, way better on the Genesis than Super Nintendo.
Yeah, but that was an add-on for a system. It couldn't do it by itself.
Dude, whatever. Nintendo decided not to do it. So, all right, we get to stay on topic. Anything else that you have, Josh, in terms of your replaying of the game, besides the soundtracks being pretty good on both?
Yeah, you just really have to tip your hat to the Genesis soundtrack. No, what I was going to say... What I was going to say is, this is a game, we talk about this a lot when we talk about beat-em-ups, which we've actually played a fair amount of so far, that really, you feel tough, you know, like the moves where you grab a guy and will slam him back and forth by his arm, that's awesome. That feels good every single time you do it. And I just love their enthusiasm for pizza, as I began the podcast talking about. That's just the perfect power-up. When you think about even games today, like Bioshock Infinite, you're walking around picking up hot dogs. Pizza is something that really can improve your mood. So I see that as being really logical and a great thing. The surfboard levels, come on, does it get any cooler than that? Like riding around on a surfboard, fighting ninjas? I think that question does not have to be answered. It does not get any cooler than that. And I wanted to say something about the AI, because we talked about during the history segment, Kevin covered very well how the AI in the Genesis version was a little bit tougher. And I do have to say that I enjoyed the AI, this kind of challenge it gives you over time, because although it's a short game, it becomes a lot longer when you factor in the beatdowns you're going to be receiving. But they're tough but fair beatdowns, right? It's sort of like a parent who loves you punishing you is what you get from the AI in Hyperstone Heist.
Do you think the AI was tough throughout the game? Because I seem to only really have issues against the bosses in Hyperstone Heist. I thought the bosses were a little hard, but I didn't really have much trouble with the...
Well, think about this. You also, I mean, to mention the differences, though, we should say that the bosses, a couple bosses were actually added for the Genesis version, including Tatsu, which obviously most notable from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the first movie and the second movie. He was in the second one too, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
He's only in the Genesis version? He's only in Hyperstone Heist?
Correct. And you...
Okay.
He's the guy that always goes... Mm. Yeah, guy, right.
The ninja, yeah, ninja, vanish.
Him.
So the thing that I also wanted to mention was when, and again, this is probably a detriment of the Genesis version, I'll be real, but to kind of extend the game, you actually play through in one of the stages, you fight all the previous bosses again.
Yeah, that's pretty obvious padding.
Yeah, but it's not something that we haven't seen in other games. Like, it's not something that is uncommon. But Josh, I mean, thank you for bringing us back on topic, because at the end of the day, they're both super fun games. And I would even say, like, I had more fun playing through these than I did Streets of Rage 2. Yeah. And for kids out there for the time, like, I love that you can go into the options and give yourself extra rests and give yourself extra lives, because there are going to be some kids that just like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles that aren't going to be great at video games, but it allows them to still play through the whole game and, you know, give you that. Like, I love that feeling of getting, like, bumping those rests and continues up, because it made me feel like I had money. Because it made me feel like I had quarters, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, sure. And what you were talking about earlier with not having a ton of money to spend at the arcade, you know, it just felt like you were getting some sort of, like, huge value, I'm sure.
Yeah, for the $2.99 to rent the game at Blockbuster, I was able to, you know, get tons of playthrough out of that game, either of them. And it's just one of those things that I really appreciate when you have that. At least just give people the option to do that in games. And there were so many out there, like Double Dragon 3, which the game was just impossible because it didn't allow you to have that flexibility in terms of the options.
Right, and what's the point? You know, once somebody has paid the $50 or whatever up front, what's the point in trying to make it and keeping the design like an arcade game that's designed for you to keep pumping quarters into it? You know, there's just not really a point at all.
I think
so they really understood this with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
I mean, it's interesting. I was listening to Retronauts just did an episode on Ninja Gaiden, and they talked about when Ninja Gaiden, I think it was 3 that came out, they were worried about the rental industry in America, so they made it a lot harder. And that's because they didn't want people to be able to rent it for a weekend and beat it. I don't know if there wasn't really a reference that was cited for that, but I think that's what Jeremy Parrish said. So that's at least one thing that I can mention that could be a possibility for that.
Yeah, I wonder if those people, and obviously they didn't do market research as well in the early 90s as what we see the industry doing today, which perhaps for better or worse, it might have been a little bit better that they didn't focus group stuff to death. But anyway, perhaps that did help. I just can't imagine that somebody wouldn't just rent it again if they wanted to, though. You know, like, it doesn't really translate into a sold copy. So I think Konami was really onto the right thing here. Let players customize their experience as much as they want, even down to whether it's an anime or, like, comic style, you know? Just let them do what they want with the experience. It's sort of a PC-like approach. I like it. I have a couple more things to say about the game.
Yeah.
I've talked about this on this podcast before. So I have a love-hate relationship with beat-em-up games, and I did even as a kid, less so as a kid, certainly. But just this idea of the only thing you do in this game is walk to the right and hit things with a not very detailed combat system. I feel like Turtles does a better job than most beat-em-ups, though, because like one of you was saying that your friend was remarking that it still holds up really well. I think it was Trey. And yeah, I know, Kevin, you just played it with a friend as well and had a good experience. And that's because this game still holds up really well, unlike most beat-em-up games. So, you know, as opposed to we just played Final Fight and Streets of Rage 2 not that long ago, and I was kind of slogging through them a little bit, if I'm going to be completely honest, you know, just kind of finishing them so that I could take notes and talk about them on the podcast. But I had a genuinely good time with this game. My wife is a Turtles fan, as a kid even, and she thought it was really cool, and she never played the game as a kid, and she still thinks this game is really awesome today, someone who's just now being introduced to it for the first time. So I think that's a really nice testament to the game. And I was also just going to say that in terms of beat-em-ups starting to feel sort of boring and repetitive over time, this game would force you to change your combat styles from time to time with things that were in the environment. Like in Hyperstone Heist, Stage 3 has these spikes hanging down from the ceiling, if you guys know what I'm talking about. And so you weren't able to do the dive kick move.
Yeah, the bamboo spikes, man.
Yeah, the bamboo spikes prevented you from doing the dive kick. So you had to really change your fighting style and maybe do more holding the C button to rush and ramming people with your head and doing different styles of attacks. And that was really smart. And then, you know, putting you on a surfboard from time to time made you change your fighting style. So they did a lot of things with the environment to make the game more interesting to play.
All right. I think Josh did a great job carrying that and bringing some more anecdotes from the playthrough. I think I might have given all my during the live stream, so I just didn't want to repeat myself, so I apologize there. But
no, man, that was still good.
Yeah, so let's take a quick break. We're going to be right back with some news, and we're going to be talking about our game recommendations and what's going to be coming out for episode number 9. I can tell you it's going to have a mega shock of games, so we'll stick around, be right back. Okay, we're going to be talking briefly about some new stuff. The first thing that we have to talk about is the winners for the Zombies Ate My Neighbors and Final Fight. So we're going to be reading off some names right now. And to make sure that you guys get access to this stuff, you have to email me again through that contact page on the website to claim your prize. And you're not going to get it for about 5 weeks because I leave for Japan on Thursday unless you get it to me like tomorrow. So the winner for Zombies Ate My Neighbors on the Super Nintendo is Ryan Moore. Ryan said, emailed and added in that he wanted to say thanks for the awesome podcast. It's wonderful to listen on my commute to and from work. I can't wait to see what game you guys come up with next week. So
thank you, Ryan.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. Yeah.
You awesome. Congrats, Ryan.
And you didn't have to submit like a message or anything. You could have just like said, like, keep up the great work. Like this person who won a copy of Final Fight, unfortunately, for the Super Nintendo. That's Brandon Christensen. Don't know where you're from, either of you guys, but hopefully you're from America. Or from the United States, I should say. So
right. Now you're gonna read their social security numbers, right?
Yeah, it's 315-46-1547.
Great. Okay.
I have their IP addresses if you want to hack their computers like Crash Override.
Yeah, well, that could be you know, they can't just get free stuff without any consequences.
We should do a movie episode just on hackers.
Sure.
DVD player. All right. So yeah. Good job, guys. You won the contest, and we're going to be doing another one. We'll be doing another one next week that will involve eShop codes. So you're going to be able to claim that stuff on eShop, which is great. It all depends on what's going to be available for the Club Nintendo stuff. So in terms of news, we forgot to talk about the 30th anniversary of the Famicom, which is pretty big because obviously it brought us the Nintendo Entertainment System in the United States and in Europe, and brought Nintendo from an arcade manufacturer and card manufacturer to a full-blown console maker and really giant in the industry. So happy birthday, Famicom. And
did you say the Famicom is 30?
30 years old.
Yeah, so the Famicom
83.
And I are like cohorts.
Yeah, and it brought us crazy things like the Famicom disc system, the twin Famicom.
Very strange, but I like it.
Yeah, it is a cool thing. I'm still kind of playing around with, like, I've been writing a list of stuff on what to pick up while I'm in Japan, because I bought a L.L. Bean XL duffel bag, which is gigantic. It, like, I can fit more than I probably should buy into it. And the thing that's kind of been always at the top of my list is a Famicom Twin made by Sharp, which plays Famicom disc systems and also Famicom games. And it's like kind of the thing to get because they seem to be a little bit more durable than the just disc systems that plug into a Famicom. And it also has the important composite out instead of just the RF out, which like they didn't have on the regular Famicom. So I think it's about time to pick one up.
Well, and you can argue that it's the 30th anniversary and all that, so, you know. That's a good reason to do it.
The thing is finding like a good one. Like if you go to Super Potato, you can get them for like $120-ish, $130. So I might just swallow and, you know, grab one of those and choke down the heavy Super Potato overpriced convenience. But the games are just really expensive. Like to get Metroid for it and the Zelda games are pretty expensive. And you got to keep in mind that is a magnetic disc. It's not going to last forever, like chips and carts and stuff like that. So
what is the average life? Do you know?
This should be dead by now.
Ah, okay.
Like so if you have a terminal disc, like a diskette, like a 3.5 inch floppy disc, like those shouldn't work if they're 20 years old, but they still do. It's like disc rot on DVDs and CD. Like if you burned a CD from 10 years ago, good luck having it play on a CD player right now. That's why whenever I collect stuff, I try to stay away from disc-based stuff. I don't collect PS1 stuff. I don't collect even like Dreamcast. Disc rot is a real problem with the GD-ROM. So you got to watch out. If you buy Dreamcast games on eBay or something like that, like make sure they have a picture of the disc flipped over so you can see if there's any rotting, like holes in the image. That is not I'm not kidding. Like a third of my Dreamcast games have that. And it's really sad. You have to really start burning or just getting the backups and burn them to CDs because that's really going to be the only way to play them.
Right. Right. And so you see why Nintendo wanted to stick with cards as long as possible.
Well, I mean, they had different reasons to do it. They had that whole load time thing, but to be honest, it is, you know, N64 games are going to last for 50 years. Like NES carts still work perfectly if you clean the contacts. The only kind of thing that you're going to run into is any kind of, and it's the same thing that I run into with arcade boards, is any kind of corrosion on the contacts or the, you know, the individual diodes basically falling off, which the cool thing about arcade collecting is that the industry is kind of really decent right now where you can get replacement parts. And you can basically go down to Radio Shack and get a lot of those things, like transistors and stuff and capacitors. Is not something that's impossible to do.
And it just sounds cool to be working on that. It's like having a hobby, you know, like a woodworking hobby or something. You have a skill when you can put together arcade cabinets.
Oh, it's terrible. I've been I'm very happy. I don't know if I talked about this last week, but I'll mention it anyways. I picked up last Saturday a Mario Brothers arcade cabinet that wasn't working for $100. And after replacing the power supply and a paint job, it looks really good. And I've been playing Mario Brothers on the arcade machine. And it is just probably the best $175 I've ever spent in my life on $25 of paint and a $50 power supply off eBay.
Do you sit down at the cabinet when you play, or do you stand?
The Nintendo cabinets are pretty short, so you're kind of encouraged to sit down. But I don't like to. I kind of think of it as like getting away from my desk while I'm working. I can stand up for a little bit and stretch my legs. So you kind of have to bend over a little bit to play in the cabinet. But the most of the other stuff, like if I'm looking around, they're a little bit taller. Like obviously my Neo Geo machine is a little bit taller, which I also picked up this past week. But arcade collecting is something you want to be really, really careful about if you're going to get into it, because there can be so many little things that pop up and you have to be either really good with a soldering iron or be willing to drop some cash on replacements and getting work done, which I'm more of the latter, where I'd rather pay someone to get a recapped chassis than to put a bunch of capacitors on a board that I would rather not mess up, because you can't find monitors anymore. You know, that's what's been made is it. So, yeah, but I'm happy. I got a Miss Pac-Man, a Bad Dudes, a Mario Brothers, and a Neo Geo 4 slot, which hopefully will be up and running by the time I get back.
Oh, Miss Pac-Man, what a glorious game.
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's hard, but it's...
We need to talk about that, like as a mini-boss or something eventually.
Yeah, no, I'd love to do, you know, a couple games. Like Mario Brothers is something that's on everything. You can... And this is like not Super Mario Brothers. It's Mario Brothers as in you're flipping turtles and flipping crabs and then kicking them because that's what you should do. And Even Bad Dudes, I think, is a really interesting B-tier beat-em-up that is available in a bunch of Data East collections. So
I was just thinking about a B-tier beat-em-up, and that just sounds like such a terrible thing, but I get what you mean. Yeah, it is a B-tier beat-em-up.
I mean, you think about it, there's so many, and there's like, in the arcade community, there's a bunch of B-tier fighting games, too, if you think of like Time Killers and
Art of Fighting.
I wouldn't put Art of Fighting in it, but I would put like World Heroes into that category. I mean, the SNK fighters are some of the best stuff that's on there. And that's why it was so important that I find another Neo Geo cabinet, just because like King of Fighters 98 is just, it's special. It's a really special game. And there's games like The Last Blade that are just not known well, and like people don't know about these games well enough, and they are classics that were unfortunately just kind of locked into the tomb of SNK. And like, I don't even think they've been SNK did a really good job re-releasing a lot of this stuff on Virtual Console, but again, I think this, like, PSN, they're not really super well represented, and same thing with Xbox. And I just still hate that on the Wii U, you have to go into the friggin' Wii portion and then go into your Wii Virtual Console games, and all that stuff didn't transfer over. I think is actually, here's some other news: the Wii U doesn't sell.
Yeah, 160,000 units shipped over 3 months, I believe, was the article this week.
That's gross.
It's really bad.
That's PlayStation Vita numbers.
Yeah, it is, and I love the Wii U. I think it's a great piece of hardware, but I'm starting to want, you know, I think that if it doesn't have a good Christmas season this year, 2014 could be really bleak. And I hate the whole Nintendo doomed thing. Believe me, I do.
With Wind Waker, a new 3D Mario game, and Donkey Kong, if it doesn't have a, yeah, I mean, you're right.
I think that's a super weak lineup.
Well, I mean, honestly, like, I have a Wii U for Nintendo games. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's everything I need. I'm not going to buy a multi-platform game on the Wii U when I can get it for Xbox or PlayStation, sure, or, you know, PS4 or Xbox One. But, you know, and I think a lot of the people that have the Wii U have it for that same reason. So, yeah, you know, in terms of Nintendo, that's a good lineup for them to have because, you know, that's their stuff. But, I mean, you're absolutely right. Like, if they don't turn it around this holiday season, then you really kind of have to start to wonder, like,
I think they'll be good because they still have Mario Kart coming up next year. Yeah, I just think Smash the Brothers holidays level. Exactly, but I don't think Smash Brothers doesn't really sell consoles.
Shoot,
I'm gonna argue it does. Game.
I think
that's a like what do you call it, esport game?
Yeah, but I mean, what is it gonna sell, like 2 million copies over the course of the whole? Like, how many copies did the Wii version sell?
I don't know offhand, but I can look that up.
Yeah, look it up real quick. But what I was going to say is that I just think when you're talking about a Donkey Kong game, after we already got a Donkey Kong game on the 3DS, and then it came out the year before that on the Wii, and you have Wind Waker, which I think is really cool because I never played through Wind Waker, but the people that own Nintendo Wiis right now, they probably already did. And
10.79 million.
Oh, not bad. Pretty good. But again, how many of those were sold to people that just had one of the 100 million Wiis that were out there?
Yeah.
And then you mentioned 3D Mario 3D World, which is just a 3DS game that they ported to the Wii U. And
I think it's going to be a little bit more than that. It's got all the inspirations of the game are drawn from that game, yes. But, I mean, they added a couple new things, and the multiplayer aspect of it is going to be...
But excuse my language, it's more four-player bullshit. Didn't we talk about this, like, on the first episode or have this conversation? But
you might have.
I think it was still fresh when we did.
Yeah.
I hate how they're, like, developing all these games.
Would I have preferred Mario Galaxy 3? Absolutely.
Not even Mario Galaxy 3, but just, like, a game that wasn't marketed as, hey, let's get three other people and we'll jump on each other's heads and cause each other to die. And they'll just see.
Their main thing now is like, okay, so I think this was kind of like a panic strategy, releasing a 3D world. I think I don't think the tablet controller is catching on quite like the Wii remote did.
Absolutely not.
So I think they're having some internal crisis. I like you know, like we were saying, we don't, you know, about the Wii U not performing well. I don't think it's going to put Nintendo in a bad position because they make so much money off of handhelds.
Yeah, that, 3DS is doing great.
Yeah, and the DS did amazing, and the Game Boy did amazing. Like, I don't think Nintendo is in financial peril.
Nope, not at all. They just had a profitable quarter.
Yeah. Console or their home console identity, yes, they're having a tough time. And, you know, it's kind of sad, but
it is
what it is.
They're going to have to recognize, and they've done it in a lot of ways, except for when it comes down to what they end up releasing and how they price it. But they say a lot of the time, Iwata will say this, and Reggie might have said this, but I know Iwata's said it, that they don't look at Sony and Microsoft as competition. So if you're not going to compete in the console space, don't compete in the console space, is my argument. Like, make something... there's a really great thread on NeoGAF this weekend. I cannot remember who made it, but he did an excellent job in the original post. And basically, it's his vision of a Nintendo console that would do well in the mass market. And it's a fairly low powered console at $150 with games that are $20, smaller in scale. But he makes a really nice case for it. And then I thought that maybe it'd be really cool to set it up where you can use a handheld alongside it and, you know, and have your games display on the screen. And I just think that Nintendo might need to admit that they don't really have a place in the $300 plus console space right now, in terms of selling to their hardcore fans like me. You know, I bought the Wii U on day one, but how many people are there like me out there who will pay $350 for it?
Yeah.
Not many.
Yeah, and it's like you and I were talking about before we started recording. Like, we got Pikmin 3 today. That is the first game I bought since November. That's 9 months that I that's gone by that I have not bought a game for the Wii U.
Yeah, I can see how that would happen.
Unbelievable. I mean, like, and it's not because, like, I don't like the system or anything. It's just because that is all that's come out. Like, I don't want a port of Mass Effect 3 on the Wii U. I don't want.
Well, the problem is that they're also exactly. They're not even. What was it? The new Batman Arkham Origins doesn't even have the multiplayer included in the Wii U version.
That's right. And who's publishing that game?
Activision. No, it's.
No, it's 2K. I think.
Is it 2K?
No.
Yeah, it's 2K Montreal making it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, someone 2K, is publishing this game, and we think it's 2K.
No,
and,
Warner Brothers game. Warner Brothers.
Warner Brothers. That's it. It's Warner Brothers. Of course, that makes sense. So
Warner Brothers Montreal is developing it. And
they make
Warner
that Mortal Kombat, right?
I heard it's good. No, but anyway, Warner Brothers will look at this and say, yeah, we don't need to put any more games on the Wii U. They don't sell. But the truth of the matter is this is the internet generation and age in which we can look at these stories online and say, oh, okay, the Wii U version isn't worth buying because it's missing this huge portion of the game. I will buy it on the PS3 or PS4 or Xbox or whatever, you know?
Yeah. Do you know what the install base of the Wii U is right now? Like, do you have any kind of idea, like a guess?
Yeah.
Are you asking, like, in terms of you're about to tell me, or are you just asking?
No, I'm asking because I honestly don't know.
Yeah, it's 140 people. In America, then there's 3,000 in Japan or something like that.
Oh, see?
Pikmin. Right, we all have had a meetup actually in Virginia a couple days ago. It was awesome.
The crazier thing is like how it's selling in Europe, where they're basically the major retailers in Europe
are dropping it.
They're completely dropping it. Like, they're still selling PSP games, but they are dropping the Wii U. It's gross.
Well, yeah, one of them is essentially Walmart, right? I think
it's their second biggest retailer, I think, in the United Kingdom.
The Wii U's one of the first things they need to do, and I don't know why they didn't do it at E3. It needs a price drop. I mean,
yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
You're $350 for hardware that's comparable to the Xbox 360 and the PS3 at $350 in 2013. That's laughable.
I think
$250 at the most.
And that's my argument. Is if they're going to say things constantly as they have about we're not competing with the Xbox 360 and the PS3 and the Xbone and the PS4. Okay, then don't make products that are very similar to them, yet don't have the same kind of software support.
No, I think I'm going to tell you a quick, brief story, and I think this tells the whole story, is that When the Wii U came out on launch day, I went to pick up one for John Riccardi of 8-4. And I just, there's a Target next door. So I'm like, all right, I'm going to go next door and maybe if they have a console, I'll buy it. And they ended up having one more basic version of the console. So I bought it and I bought new Super Mario Brothers U. And then I went home and then the Giant Bomb live stream started up for the Wii U. And I think if you just watch that live stream, like you can kind of just see how or where and how much Nintendo messed up. And the stories that came after that, like in the Wii U gamepad, they intentionally put in a smaller battery, even though there's room for a larger battery.
Yep.
And you have terrible battery life on the Wii U gamepad. It's like 2 to 3 hours where I think it was Nyko released a battery just a couple, like 2 months ago, that allows you to get like a 7 hour charge out of it. And like Nintendo should have done that. They cut so many corners with the Wii U just because I believe they thought they just had another hit on their hands. Like, man, people are going to love this asymmetrical second screen gameplay. And they just did not have the titles. Like we talked about, I think in the first episode, they did not staff up. They were just very ignorant or arrogant.
They kind of seem full of themselves, especially recently at E3. When they did, they Reg,
but they ha, he has Reggie. To do that though.
Yeah, but I can't stand Reggie. I really can't stand that guy. It, like Jeff Keighley from Game Trailers was grilling him. I think we talked about this before as well. But he kept saying it's all about the games and like where like it's, the Wii U's all about games. Like what the fuck are you talking about? Like
that's our first where are the games? The yeah,
It's another example of they're saying things that don't match up with what they do.
But it's that's PR, guys. I mean, that's going to be the same thing that Xbox did with the Xbox One, and it's the same thing Sony did with the PlayStation 3 when that launched. And I think it's just kind of like it goes in circles. And
those sold at a healthy rate, though.
The PS3s?
Not after the first
like 2 months. They were all over the place.
It was $600. You're right.
Yeah, they were super easy to get. I mean, it was $599. The first game that came out that was worth buying was MotorStorm, and then after that, we had to wait till Metal Gear Solid 4.
Yeah, which is what 7 months later or something.
Yeah.
No, it was 2008.
Wow.
I mean,
Florida. I lived in Florida when the Wii U came out. I came home to Georgia for Thanksgiving, and I went to Best Buy on Black Friday. Mm-hmm. Late in the afternoon, after all the rush had gone, there was 12 premium or deluxe Wii U's sitting on the shelf.
They missed out on the price and the R&D expenses. So
yep.
Well, guys, Nintendo, we want you to do well. We only say this because we love you. But get it together.
Dude, I own more Nintendo games than any other brand. Even though I have... The last couple months, I've bought about 20 Genesis games, and I bought, I have a decent Dreamcast collection and PlayStation 3 stuff. But like I said, I would love to get a new Zelda game. I love I give Trey a bunch of crap for being a Zelda fan, but a super Zelda fan, I should say. But I still think that they can do a lot better than. Skyward Sword. Even though I loved parts of Skyward Sword, I thought there were other parts that were just did not work. And
terrible.
But man, that soundtrack for Skyward Sword is pretty awesome. And,
yeah, it is.
There are certain things that they just kind of need to shake up and take a little bit of risk, but make them calculated enough where they're not going to be having to spend 6 years developing a game or, again, make these hardware choices that just kind of don't really make sense. Like an 8 gigabyte storage on a console today
in 2013
is super dumb.
Unacceptable. Mm-hmm. But you can use external hard drives. Oh, so you want me to go spend more money?
So it's an extra $80 for an external hard drive. No. Or
you got to find one. They recommend you get one that's got like 2 USB plugs. Because of some kind of power.
The power thing, yeah. So yeah. The other thing is that even on their premium console for $350, you get 32 gigs of storage with a you know, Xbox 360 for for PlayStation 3 for $249, you get what? It's 500 gigabytes.
They're up to that now, yeah.
And all they needed to do was add an extra 2.5 inches of height to it, and you could throw in like a laptop hard drive, and people wouldn't have cared. Like, the biggest confusing thing they have right now is that everyone thinks it looks like a Wii, and they can't tell the difference. They should have differentiated it a little bit, make the box look a little bit, you know, more different, and they would have been good to go. Obviously, there's a comparison of price because the Wii U gamepad costs like $100 to make or whatever. I don't care. Like, who's really playing the Wii U? Because, man, I love that Wii U gamepad.
It was a big mistake designed around the Pac-Man versus game or whatever. Yeah. To build a whole console around that idea. It was certainly a mistake. As much as I like awesome, off TV play.
And it's so weird. Like, the PlayStation Vita is going to do the same thing for PlayStation 4, but it's an optional thing. Like, if they just did that same idea, but say, hey, and guess what? We're releasing this XXL 3DS that you can pick up. Maybe it's got like a 5-inch screen. No, that's a stupid idea. But I'm just saying, like, at least Sony's making it an option. And I think, man, that PlayStation Vita is a great way to do it.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's a sexy device too, man.
Yeah, and it potentially drives people to a different hardware space for them just so they can sell them more content.
Except for the memory cards. All right, where we're going to end this week's show, because we could just argue about this forever. And, you know, every one of the companies doesn't do everything right, and it does go in cycles. Like we said, the PlayStation did a really bad job at the launch of the PS3. Xbox is kind of messing up the Xbox One launch, and Nintendo is being Nintendo. But, you know, again, I hope to give a little bit more of a perspective once I get out there to Japan, and I'm going to shoot some videos while I'm out there too to kind of show you, like, Nintendo basically owns that place as much as Sony is doing its thing. The Nintendo is just all over the place on the subways, on the buses and things like that. So hopefully I'll bring some more of that stuff and be posting it on the website. Until then, please don't forget to submit a review on iTunes. That's how we're going to be picking our submissions for the contest. So if you submit a review on there, that's how you're going to get access to the ability to be entered. And we only have like 26 reviews on there. So that gives you a pretty good chance to win free games. Like, that's a really cool thing. Also, I'm going to be coming back with some sealed copies of Night Trap for the Sega CD in Japanese for lucky fans.
Wow.
And, you know, copies.
Are you really?
I already have a copy, but yeah, I'll bring more copies. They're like $1.
Cool.
So you can get your Dana Plato in Japanese. So that's it for this week's episode. Trey, where can people follow you on Twitter?
At HeelTreater.
Josh?
Joshua Hillier. There's two L's in Hillier. And I want you to follow me. It's going to be great. I'll take you great places.
And I'm also at twitter.com/KevinLarrabee. Same thing for twitch.tv/KevinLarrabee. I'll probably do some streaming. And guess what? Next week, we're going to be doing some Mega Shock games. And I'm talking about some Neo Geo games. We're doing three games next week. And it is a really cool episode that we're putting together. And the cool thing about the three that we're doing is that they're available on a bunch of different places. So if you haven't touched Neo Geo stuff before, this is going to be the best time to get into it. And it is a little bit in celebration of picking up a machine this week. But we're going to be talking about Neo Turf Masters, which is arguably the greatest golf game of all time. We're going to be talking about Metal Slug 1. And we're going to be talking about Baseball Stars 2, which is a super Japanese, awesome, over-the-top baseball game, which we'll bring back around at a later date with some base wars for the NES. But we're going to be doing Neo Geo Love next week. Three games, three very different games. And the cool thing is that we're just going to be doing generalized conversations about them. We're going to separate each game, give you the history of each. But then since really we all had limited Neo Geo experience, mine was mostly in the Papagino's in Beverly, we're going to be just talking about the games in general. So it's going to be a great time. And hopefully this will be coming out next Sunday. Like I said, I'm going to be leaving for Japan on Thursday. and I might just be kind of partying all weekend. So if we miss a week, that's why, or it might be a little bit later in the week. So
it's the sake.
Yeah, no, it's Osake Kabiru or something like that. So that's it. Thanks as always. And until next week, I guess I'm going to have to say sayonara.
Au revoir.
Okay.
Forgot recommendations. Oh,